Hi, I'm Coach John Cook, and this is the Basketball and Life Podcast. My guest on today's episode is Brooke Cupps. Brooke is the head basketball coach at Centerville High School near Dayton, Ohio. And you may remember that Brooke joined us in episode 72 back in 2020. A lot has changed since we last spoke with Brooke Cupps. Well, first of all, he's been on probably every podcast across the country that has anything to do with basketball. He's also published one book and co-authored a second book with Ryan Hawk. If you haven't had an opportunity to pick up Coach Cupps' book yet, I hope that you'll do so. Surrender the Outcome is the title of the book, and his second book, The Score That Matters, is co-authored with Ryan Hawk, the host of the Learning Leader podcast. Brooke is a fascinating guest, an outstanding basketball coach, a terrific teacher and leader and motivator. I think he's got something to share for everybody. I thank you again for listening to today's episode. I hope you enjoy my chat about basketball and life with Centerville High School basketball coach Brooke Cupps. Hey, Coach John Cook here, and before we get to today's episode, I just wanted to take a quick second and let you know that we have officially launched our website. It's bballandlife.com. That's bballandlife.com. We encourage you to check out the website where you can access all of our content, and there's lots of other items available for you there. You'll get more on that later in the episode. Again, visit us if you would at bballandlife.com. Thanks again for listening to today's episode. Coach Cupps, I cannot tell you how much I appreciate your willingness to do this again. We have not had a lot of repeat guests on the podcast. And for anybody who doesn't necessarily remember, Coach Cupps was on with me for episode 72, which I guess is what we're now referring to as season one. But it was in 2020 during the pandemic. Coach, I appreciate you joining me again. There's a lot of catching up we need to do, but just want to tell you, first of all, thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, John. It's an honor. I'm grateful to be back on.
So when you and I spoke back in 2020 on the original episode, we were having a conversation allowing you to kind of talk about your journey. And one of the things that we kind of blew past initially and had to come back to on the episode was that you, during the pandemic, wrote a book. And so I guess I want to start kind of right there to say, first of all, if anybody hasn't listened to episode 72, please go back and do so. You'll get the full story of Coach's journey, but you wrote a book, Surrender the Outcome. It published, I think, right, you know, toward the end of the shutdown or right in that time frame. And I have a copy. I'm sure, I don't know, you probably know how many have sold. Lots and lots of copies have sold. But the first question I have regarding the book is, just to recap, number one, why write a book? And then I'll follow up based on what we talk about here.
Yeah, that's a great question to start with. I ask myself that all the time. I really didn't start it to publish it as a book. I kind of had an idea that I wanted to just write down, like, kind of my journey from how I thought about coaching and leading young people when I started out to how I view it now. And I, when the pandemic hit, I was just like, I'm just gonna start writing and just see what happens. Like, I've never written anything like that in my life. And you know, Ryan Hawk, who is a friend of mine and does the Learning Leader podcast, we had gone back and forth with some leadership stuff, and something that he said stuck with me. We were talking about having a writing practice as a leader, and he just said like, writing creates clarity. Which was interesting to me. I'd never thought about it that way, but as I started to write, it's right. Like, you have to, like, you can be thinking of a lot of things, but when you have to write it and pick the words for it, put it down on a piece of paper, you have to make decisions and create clarity around those ideas and thoughts. And so that kind of led me into it. And I just started writing. I'd get up at like 4:30 and just write for 4 or 5 hours every morning during the pandemic. I mean, there wasn't anything else to do. and so I, you know, you do that for a couple months and you got a lot of writing. And so I kind of got it to where I thought it was fairly done. And I shared it with a couple people, just like, hey, I wrote this. And then, you know, then Ryan actually kind of challenged me to publish. He's like, well, why aren't you publishing it? I was like, I am publishing that. Nobody really cares about what, you know, what my story is about that stuff. I just wrote it for me. And, but then, you know, he challenged me. So then I was like, all right, I'm going to try to publish it. So then it turned into like being this challenge. I like to try to do hard stuff, and that was definitely a unique challenge for me. I had no idea. I knew I wasn't going to sell it to a publisher. Like, who's going to buy it? And so then it became like, all right, well, how do I edit this thing? What's the inside design cover look like? How do I format the interior? Like, how do I publish it? So I just kind of went into these deep dives and trying to figure that stuff out, screwed it up, and went back and did it again. And I don't know. I remember when I got the first book back, I was like, oh my gosh, it actually looks like a book. I expected it to just be stapled together or something. So it was good though. It's been a great experience. I'm definitely glad that I did it. It's been cool.
I really find it interesting that the simple statement of writing brings clarity. It's like one of those truths that it's out there. I guess you just, whether or not you choose to think about it. I mean, I reflect back on, like, throughout my life, I always thought going for a job interview at least every couple of years was good, because I had to redraft a resume and I had to kind of go through the preparation process for what my priorities would be. And that was sort of a similar process. Like, I'm putting things on paper to prepare. And now that I think about it, actually, every job I ever interviewed for, I came away from it at least being clearer about what mattered to me and how I wanted to approach it. So that concept of writing brings clarity is again, pretty simple, but I don't think there's a lot of people probably thinking in that way. As you're going through that, Brooke, and you're doing this writing, I mean, you're already several years into the, we'll call it the transformation, the change in you from the way you approach coaching to the way you decided it needed to be done. And you're in the middle of a pandemic. I don't even know exactly how I would envision the way that writing process is actually impacting you when you're in the middle of a pandemic and so much is uncertain.
Yeah, I think it probably just took me away from that. It was kind of an escape for me, because I'm writing about stuff that had happened, or I'm creating a story around kind of my journey. And I think a lot of it was probably a release. I didn't know it at the time, but, you know, reflecting and looking back on it, I think that probably had as much of a, you know, of a impact on just kind of getting through that and being able to stay tied to basketball and the game and, you know, and our guys and that kind of stuff.
And so the pandemic was what it was. I don't want to dwell on that. There are lots of things that I think all of us learned from that. But coming out of that fall, that 2020-2021 season, you know, on the original episode that you were on with me on the podcast, you talked about coaching through your core values, and you made a statement, you may not remember this, but I have the advantage of going back and listening to the pod again as I prepared to do this. You made the statement at that time that, hey, I've never won any state championships or anything, but a lot of great coaches have never won state championships. My high school coach is a guy I would take over anybody. This was kind of your quote, and didn't win a state championship. And as, I guess, luck would have it, however, you know, whatever fate it was during that season that followed that conversation, you guys go on to win a state championship. And that 2021 thing was awfully, awfully special. What I want you to reflect on for me, if you wouldn't mind, is you talked in the original episode of the pod about your guys had a goal for that season. And I may misquote this, but it was something like attack every opportunity with a purpose.
Yep, that's it.
Yeah, so can you just, I know we talked a lot about you guys not being destination goal-oriented as a program. Can you give your guys a grade or reflect on some situations where that attacking every opportunity with a purpose was evident for your guys?
Yeah. And you know, that's always our goal. Our goal is always a process-based thing. And so I don't know if I talked about this or not, but when we said that, we frame it as like, we it's at our retreat in the preseason. Every year we go to this retreat, and we do some stuff as a team and do a really hard workout, chop down a tree and do some, you know, stuff for our program. But one of the biggest things we do is we establish our goal for the season. And so our goal is always a process-based goal. So it's never win this or win that. So we just say, like, you know, a dad and a 10-year-old kid are watching us play for the first time. They've never seen us play. What do you want them walking away saying about Centerville basketball and the way we play the game? And so from that, you know, we'll get all these different ideas and guys will throw stuff out. And then we narrow that down to like, you know, three or four things that are really important to that group, because it's unique to every group. And then we say, okay, if that's what we want, if that's how we want to be viewed, and we want, that's how we want to be as a team, what do we have to do every single day, everything that we're doing, what do we need to do daily in order for that to be the most likely outcome, right? And so, you know, that year it happened to end up being, like, we need to attack every opportunity with purpose. We were really young that year. We started, I think we started one senior, played two, and started two sophomores and two juniors. We had been okay the year before. We lost in the districts to Moeller the year before, who had beaten us like three of the last 4 years. And that group, like, just had an edge to them. Like, they had some really good young guys that had something to prove. And so that, like, the attack thing was clearly part of, like, as they were talking, that, like, they were like, attack was definitely a part of what their focus was. And then we got into, like, well, attacking is one thing, but, you know, doing it with a purpose and doing it with intentionality. Like, when you're doing a drill, you're doing the drill to get better at that. And when we got a focus for practice, like, we're intentional about doing that, right? We can't talk about communication and transition defense in January. Like, that can't be a conversation.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we went through that stuff. And then, I mean, there were a ton of times, you know, Gabe was obviously a big catalyst in that, because it fits his, like, it fits his personality and his mindset well. And so there were a lot of times, like, in, you know, timeouts, practice, huddles, that, you know, that guys would bring it up and we would talk about it. We reflected on it and addressed it every day. But the coolest one was in the state championship game with 2.1 seconds left. You know, Westerville Central's got the ball on baseline out of bounds. We're up one. And our guy, they call a timeout. Our guys come to the huddle. And that was the only thing anyone said in the huddle. Like, we said, switch everything. And then, like, one of our guys on the bench goes, just attack it with purpose. Attack it with purpose. Just go guard. Attack it with purpose. Do what we do. So it was really cool to see it come, like, complete full circle. Like, that's the, like, that was their coaching point to each other in that last play of the season.
Well, and I like hearing that, and I think, you know, I had read it before as well, obviously, but the interesting thing about it is, after I read that and as you talk about it, my immediate reflection is to something that not everybody will remember, and you probably do. If I bring it up, I'm quite certain you'll remember it, is I didn't get to be there for the state final game, because I had, you and I talked off before we started recording, I was actually going to have a little bit of a time and spend some time with my wife, for a brief time on a Sunday. So I didn't get to watch the state final game, but I was there after the state semifinal, and in the post game press conference, you had Gabe and another one of your players at the press conference with you. And I'm going to say this and hope that it rings true. Like, players can do coach speak if they pay attention to their coaches. That can happen. But what I heard was your guys responding to questions, and it didn't sound like they were using rehearsed answers. It sounded like they were speaking from their hearts and saying exactly what your program is about. That had to be an incredibly, I don't even know what the right word is. It had to be satisfying, but it had to give you some level of, hey, whatever the hell happens tomorrow, we're doing right here.
Yeah. The certain, like, it reaffirms the surrender of the outcome mindset and stuff that we talk about, because, like you said, like, fate will have it, or whatever luck would have it, we won the state championship that year. Like, that's exactly what it is. Like, I mean, yeah, it's fate. Like, I mean, you know how many things could have gone wrong? Like, things went our way. Like, that has to happen. Like, I mean, it's not because I'm the greatest coach. It's not because our guys were necessarily the best team. We were good. We put ourselves in the situation and in the, you know, in the conversation, but things still have to go your way. I mean, that's just the reality of it. And so to tie everything, I said this about the year we lost in the state championship game. We're 29-0 going into the state championship game, and we lose. Like, I wouldn't change anything about that season. I mean, yeah, I'd love to win the last game, and I would have done different things coaching that last game. But in terms of the preparation and the way we went about that, handled our business, and even the, after that game, how our guys talked to the media and stuff like that, I'm good, man. Like, I'm good. Dave Zeller didn't win a district championship, and he's a hell of a lot better coach than I am. And so it's like, it's not that much of a reflect. It's not as much of a reflection on you as you think it is in the moment. It's more about, you know, just try to get better, give the most you can to your kids, get your kids to give the most they can to each other, and take what happens. And it's all good.
Well,
it's all good.
Yeah, and again, we said it. The title of the book is Surrender the Outcome. I hope more people will buy the book. I don't care how many have bought it. I think it should be on every coach's shelf in America, but I also think every dad should have that book, and by extension should share it with every mom that's out there. I think but that notion of surrender the outcome is one thing on paper. It's another thing in practice on a day-to-day basis, and maybe it's a separate entity in and of itself when, for example, you win a state title in 2021, you lose a state championship in 2022, and you lose in the Final Four in 2023. Any bumps in the road, any scenarios coming out of those two, I'll use the word disappointment and put it in air quotes, those two seasons that ended without the championship when you were that close, any bumps in the road with how your guys responded, obviously there were some very reaffirming responses to that, but do you recall anything from those difficult circumstances that maybe were a little difficult and you were able to lean back into everything that you'd been teaching?
You're kind of always in that because, I mean, society's always pulling you to base your success on your wins and losses or your how much money you're making or anything like that. And so, I mean, you have a lot of those throughout the season where you have to refocus and get back to the main thing. And we had numerous times like that in the year we won it, and we had numerous ones in the next 2 years. But you know, when you look at it, it's really hard for me to step back away from it and be anything but grateful. Like I just don't know how you can do that. It seems very, very arrogant and conceited to think that I deserve that. Like I deserve to win. I deserve to win one or two or three. Like I just feel like, you know, I felt like our guys moved forward in life. I felt like our guys chased excellence, and I felt like our guys grew and tough, passionate, unified, and thankful. Hopefully, I feel like they're in better positions to be better fathers. You know, better followers, better, you know, friends for the rest of their lives. So I'm good. Like I'm really good. And I think our guys had the disappointment, but I felt like once we were done with that, I think our guys are too.
I think that's the part that is going to be maybe the most impactful for people that really invest in trying to change the way that they approach these things is having a level of contentment while you still have a desire to chase excellence. And that's the phrase that you used. And I would like you to, if you're able to, talk a little bit about maybe creating that balance of being able to surrender the outcome, but still have a hunger for and a desire to chase excellence instead of just chasing what the world says is greatness.
Yeah, I mean, I think some people, it comes off to some people as a lack of competitiveness when it's really not that at all. It's almost an ultra competitiveness with something that you can control and that you can stay focused on. I think it's really hard to talk about excellence, and it's a challenge with being a public school teacher and coach without talking about your faith. Because really, everything that we do in our program is like scripture based. Now I can't say that in our huddles. I can't say that in our, but I'm pretty sure most of our guys get that. Like, and I have, you know, private conversations with guys when they ask me about it, and I tell them what I believe. But for me, like that whole foundation is built on the truth of scripture. And so it's not hard to surrender. like it was hard for me to surrender when I was building it on my own truth when I was my first 7 years of coaching. It should have been hard to surrender. Like it wasn't, it was on sand, right? Like, but it's a lot easier to surrender that now. And, you know, for me, like my purpose is to inspire others to strive for excellence over success. Like that's my purpose in life. And basketball has been, you know, the biggest platform for me to do that because of the depth of relationships I get to have with kids. But excellence is that true self that we were created to be. You know, Maslow called it your self-actualization. And, you know, I mean, it's like that, like what you can become, you should become, right? Like that best version of yourself. To me, that's fulfilling what Christ has put us here for, is becoming that best version. So the competition isn't with somebody else. It's becoming that true self that I feel like you were created to be. And so it's a competition at a whole different level, and that's what I think most people miss out on. And just because you accept what is, doesn't mean you're not competitive. It doesn't mean that you're not trying to be the best that you can be. It's okay. Like, back at it tomorrow. Keep chopping, keep swinging.
It's one of the things that I think is always going to leave me wanting to be a part of a team and be in a gym somewhere, is that I'm not sure what other areas of life are so readily available to teach scriptural truths about competition and about toughness and about, you know, the self-denial and those. I'm not sure any platform gives you a greater way to teach that than what we do in sports. That's the part that has always kind of mesmerized me, is like, I know businessmen can do the same thing probably, and maybe, you know, farmers could do the same thing maybe, but it just feels like it's such a natural fit for what we do because of the way we can put things together and the attention level that you get from kids that are plugged into something they're passionate about.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm doing some like leadership work with Ryan Hawk right now, and we work with some different businesses, and there's a football coach friend of mine that's doing it too. And it's like, we've talked about this a little bit, and it's like, what you don't realize when you're in coaching is how much everybody else wants to be doing what you're doing. Everybody wants to be part of the team. That they like I never was like, I don't know if this stuff will translate to business. Like they love it because they wish they were in a group of a team that cared that much. That's what they're all searching for, that sense of belonging that only a team can give you.
I'm assuming that's Garen that you're talking about, Garen Stokes.
Yeah.
So I've never met Ryan Hawk. I hope maybe one day I'll get the opportunity to. I have been fortunate enough to meet Garen on a couple of occasions, just because Mark Huelsman and I are pretty close. I worked for Mark when he was the assistant women's coach at Northern. I worked on their staff, and Mark and I have remained close. And so I've met Garen a few times, and really good guys. I mean, that's a terrific circle that you're talking about in terms of guys that I think, there just is such a fine line in the world's eyes. It seems there's such a fine line between having an edge and a desire to really excel and still being able to be viewed as humble. I don't know why people think that's a challenge, but the world thinks that those two things are at odds with one another. And I just, I'm glad there's guys like you guys that are, I think, demonstrating in a way that you can kind of do both and do it pretty well.
Yeah, I definitely don't think they need to be isolated. I think they can be married for sure.
Well, I want to ask you before we take a break, just one kind of question now to circle back to all the outcomes of the last three seasons and the book in the mix in there. And before we talk about what's ahead, and I'm obviously want to spend some time talking about, you know, Gabe's career and your family and the impact of all that, plus what's ahead for you guys. But I guess the question I'm left with after looking at the way all of it unfolded, from the writing of the book to the publishing of the book to the way the next three seasons unfolded, that it's just really kind of a unique way that things have played out. Has there been any, or have there been any kind of unexpected consequences or outcomes from these things that stand out to you, either from the what the book has created for you guys or what the last three seasons has done for you, your program, or any of your players?
Other than providing opportunities to share, which has been really cool, and allowing me to meet some coaches that I would have never met before. I mean, I've gotten calls with my book from coaches in California and Arizona that have read it, which blew my mind. I mean, because when I wrote it, I was kind of like, I hope somebody else is going through this, has gone through this too. I hope I'm not the only one that screwed this up this bad to start with. and so that's been really cool. Just providing a different, a way to connect with people and coaches, because that, like, I mean, how it is, that's what this is. Like, I don't even think it's a business. It's a calling that, that connects people. And that's what you remember. It's what you talk about. Those are the things that you appreciate and value as your life moves forward. The success of our program, it's just given us a different platform and a different avenue. You know, like, we've been an Adidas sponsored team, and we've been able to play a national schedule, and we've competed against the best teams in the country. So what it's really allowed us to do is we've just been able to continue raising the bar, and our guys just keep responding. And it's like, you think there's a bar that maybe we can't get past, and our guys just act like that bar is not even there and just keep working and keep going and just keep playing. And, it'll be interesting here now that, Gabe and some of those guys have graduated that were in those 3 years. But as I watch our guys work in the weight room and in the gym and, in our summer stuff, like, we're fine. Like, our guys are working at an incredibly high level. They're very, very dedicated. It's just who you are now. And so that's been cool to be able to try to continue pushing and challenging guys with just raising that bar, holding those standards high.
Well, we'll take a quick break here, Brooke, and then I'd like to talk about that evolution and becoming a quote-unquote national program and some of the other things that have been a part of the overall evolution of your involvement in the game and your program before we get into, obviously, some conversation about Gabe and what's ahead for him. We'll just take a real quick break.
Sounds good.
Hi, I'm Coach John Cook, and I just want to say thank you so much for listening to the Basketball and Life podcast. We are excited to announce that we have officially launched our website, bballandlife.com. That's bballandlife.com, where you can access all of our content, where you'll have opportunities for membership at $4.99 a month. You'll be able to gain a 10% discount on all merchandise available at bballandlife.com, as well as access to show notes and other content that we make available. We're also active on X. At bballandlifepod is where you can find us on X. We encourage you to reach out to us there, make suggestions, tell us how you feel about the show, what you enjoy about it, or what we might be able to do a little bit better. Again, our website is basketballandlife.com. All episodes are available, membership opportunities available at $4.99 a month that will give you a 10% discount on all merchandise and allow access to show notes and other content. And again, visit us on X as well, at bballandlifepod. Thanks again so much for listening. I hope you'll get over to our website soon. Okay, Coach, so, when we talk about the impact that the book has and the success of your program has, and you, before the break, mentioned a number of things that have kind of changed or naturally evolved because of some of the success that you've had, I want to reference back to something from the first time you were on the pod, and you talked at that time that you had spent some time helping some businesses, maybe even some families, go through the process of identifying their core values. And there's a real, you said at the time, like, this is kind of a side gig that we do. Now you have a book that's published. That's going to obviously create a platform for you and give you more opportunities. Is that something that you're able to do while you're still involved with all of these, I'll say, basketball-related things? But can you talk about continuing to apply that craft as well as the coaching things that you do with basketball?
Yeah. I mean, the book is definitely provided. provided some additional opportunities in those areas. And I've been able to juggle most of the time. I mean, I'm doing stuff in the evenings and doing stuff on the weekends and things like that. But, you know, Zoom, the popularity of Zoom has helped a lot, that I don't have to be in certain places. But I've done a lot of core value work, core values and behavior work. That's kind of the workbook at the end of the Surrender the Outcome, taking people through that. Because it is, I mean, it's helpful to have somebody talking to you through that. And so I've worked with several, actually a lot of like young college coaches that are maybe looking at, you know, getting their own program that have reached out to me. I've probably worked with, I don't know, probably 10 to 15 college coaches about like that were a few head coaches and a few that were, you know, the rest were assistants that were wanting to get things lined up and straight before they got a head coaching job so they could jump right in and try to get some clarity on what it is they believe and how they should run. They want to run things, you know, and then the business stuff. I've done several of those now where I've had the opportunity to talk to businesses. And, you know, for me, I enjoy those because it's really just a different platform for my same purpose. So it's allowing me to really do the same thing. You know, and touch more lives and impact more people.
And you've got, I mean, what can only be, defined or described as you've got a real passion for that and that part of leadership and personal development and group development. But you have said since the first time I met you that, you know, your passion for basketball has been there since sixth or seventh grade. And so when you see kind of successful, and again, I put that in air quotes, outcomes from, yeah, when you see you have successful outcomes in, you know, the area of the book writing and the core value teaching and working with businesses, and at the same time, your basketball program is evolving to a place where you said it, you get to play a national schedule. You're again, air quotes here, a national basketball program at the high school level. You've been heavily involved with Adidas and a part of AAU basketball in a couple different, I guess, iterations of a program with AAU. That's, I mean, hell, as many people as probably seen your teams play on TV have seen you play in person, whether it was AAU or high school. So talk a little bit, if you will, I overuse the word balance, but are there challenges in making sure that each of those areas gets what it deserves while you still kind of maintain some level of balance and sanity for just you?
Yeah, you know, I mean, actually, I just taught on this day in my leadership class, the paradox of success is, you know, like where you got to make sure when you do start getting those opportunities that you have the discipline to not let it affect the main thing. You got to keep the main thing the main thing. And so the way I've looked at it is as long as it doesn't, you know, hinder or become a drawback from my teaching and coaching or my, you know, my family, then I'm willing to do it. And so, because it allows me to, like I said, impact more people. But I think that's where it comes to is you gotta have the discipline to say no to some things too, things that don't speak directly to your values and to your purpose. You gotta let those things go, even if they're great opportunities. You gotta pass on some of those things. And so, you know, so far I've been lucky. And, you know, the whole national schedule with our high school team, it's just like, I mean, I want to play the best teams we can possibly play. And our guys are to that mindset now. I mean, Coach, I went a long time trying to begging people to play us and people telling us no, that we weren't good enough. You can bet, like, now I'm like, they ask and they're really good. We're playing. Like, I don't care where we got to go, how many home games we need to have or away games we need to have. Like, we're going after it. That's the fun part of it.
Well, and you, again, may not remember, but you mentioned back 3 years ago when we spoke, you know, that Carl Creamer was one of the first guys that was willing to invite your, at the time, I think, Graham to be a part of things. And Centerville was a much larger school with a foundation that was maybe, I won't say ready made, but at least there were some things in place that would allow for growth to happen if it was organic and it was based in the way that you were going to do things. It was almost, again, there's no coincidence, but the timing of where that program was and the way you wanted to do things, it kind of was the perfect combination of the way things came together. And then you end up with a remarkably talented group of kids starting about 2020, 2021, where that's a core group of kids that if once the buy-in was there, I mean, this almost feels like a natural outcome of it, even though you probably wouldn't have necessarily predicted it. Is that fair?
Yeah, I would have never predicted it. And, you know, I didn't really have any expectation with that going into it. I just, you know, that group of the 2022 class were third graders when I got here. And so they were juniors with the year we won it. And I don't think they were the first class to go all the way through our program from third grade through 12th grade.
Yeah.
I'm not taking credit for that. That was a very talented and a really gifted class. But I do think like the opportunity to spend 10 years with those guys, you know, and now that's the norm. Now everybody's spent 10 years in our program. And so now it's just kind of who we are and what we do.
Well, and your program, I mean, it's almost mythical the way people that I talk about the development of your son and how it coincided with your program. So like my son, who is 20 years old, has said things to me since he was 14. Hey, this Gabe Cups, he plays AAU with Bronny James. And so there have been this kind of mythical development of that kind of thing. But you've put together an AAU program or been a part of an AAU program that has seen high-level basketball. You've got guys from across the country, or at least across the region, that play together. When that is going on in the off-season, is that something that you think is that a bonus for your program that actually maybe creates more interest for kids who might want to play at Centerville because of what they know about the things that are happening that are kind of ancillary to Centerville basketball? Do you feel like there's any sort of kind of momentum or upswing that your high school program gets from what happens in the off season in the AAU world?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I don't really know. I don't think it can hurt. It's hard. I don't have any idea. Like, I just know Centerville basketball from the inside. I mean, I really have no clue of what people say about Centerville basketball outside of our program and our guys. And so, I really mean that. Like, I don't read any message boards. I don't read any of that stuff about us. And so what other people are saying about us and what other people think about us, I don't really know how we're viewed. I don't really care. Like, it's just kind of like, we're good. Like, I like what we're doing. I feel like I'm fulfilling the purpose and the reason God put me here and put me in this position. And I think I'm giving everything I have to our guys. And we're going to play good basketball. We're going to try to play the right way. We're going to play really hard. You know, we're going to do that stuff that's who we are and what I believe in. And, you know, I'm grateful to be in a place. I mean, I do know that, like, I'm grateful to be in a place where our kids buy into it, listen. Like, the work our guys do is outrageous. I mean, I know a lot of people say that. I've said before, like, our Breakfast Club stuff, like, you know, a lot of people, after we kind of started getting better, people started asking me about Breakfast Club, and I always share that stuff with them. It's like you can't catch us now. Like, you can't catch our work. Like, those guys, our juniors and seniors that are doing Breakfast Club, have been doing that for 6 years now. Like, you ain't catching that. You ain't, like, that's compound interest, man. That's just math. Like, you can't catch that stuff. So, our guys are so bought into it. And maybe the biggest part of us being able to sustain some of that is, like, the parents have now seen value in it. And I think that is a big fight sometimes. It's like, the work that you're asking kids to do, do they really see it as being beneficial? And I mean, we'll have kids when we start stuff back up. Like, we'll have 10 kids that are probably coming to Breakfast Club every day and every weightlifting session that won't make a team. and won't complain about it, won't say anything. Like, we'll obviously meet with them and talk to them, but they're to a point now where them and their parents, they see the value and the sacrifice and the work and the core values and that stuff, which they're getting whether they make the basketball team or not, or whether, you know, if they play, if they're getting cut as sophomores or juniors, they've played 10 years of basketball in our program, and they still feel like there's value in that. And so I'm really grateful for that. I think that is probably a byproduct of some of the success to give some validation to that.
And I don't want to bog down in too many of the details, because there's a zillion different podcasts you can go to that are going to be X and O based or skill development based, and they're out there. People can go find them. But for anybody that might not have a real awareness, kind of what's the crux of Breakfast Club, kind of its beginning, and what does it represent, and what are the things that you guys address during that?
Yeah, so it's when we get our skill development in. And so, like, when we practice in season, we don't do any, like, individual skill development stuff within our practice. But every other day of the year, our guys are in the gym working out. Like, now it's a dead period, but, like, our guys, they'll be in there. I'm sure there's five or six guys in there right now. And our custodians will let them in. We've got really good support system around us. But our Breakfast Club is when our guys create separation. Like, we talk about, like, our passionate core value is choose extra work, and we say steal inches. Well, there's a lot of inches to steal at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Amen. Amen.
And, you know, our guys, and we talk about it being together is such an important part, because trust is a huge part of our team. Just by the way we play and what we ask our guys to sacrifice with their roles and stuff. So they have to trust each other. And so that shared suffering that they have at 6 a.m. every day, you see those guys getting up, and here they are. That matters, man. It just matters. I'm not smart enough to know why and all the stuff behind it, but it's a different deal. When you have, everybody on your team is in there at 6 in the morning, it's just a different deal. And I think it goes a lot to why our guys play so hard and they care so much. That's our Breakfast Club, though. Started off with one guy for 2 years. We had one guy, Joey Weingarten. And now, I mean, every day this summer we had over 30. And so we had, like, Gabe and Tom House came in the day after we won the state championship game at 5 o'clock in the morning. We got done at like 2 or 3 in the morning. They were there at 5. Gabe came in the day after we lost the state championship game. It's just who we are. Like, that's just the fabric of it. And what's really cool now is Gabe does it at Indiana. Tom does it at Florida State. Like, they see that as home base, I think, a lot of times. Like, play well, I work. Play bad, I work. What we do.
I love the phrase home base. And it doesn't have to be the same thing for every guy, but I say about a lot of these podcasts that after we're done, there in that podcast there was a nugget somewhere that there's value in for some listeners. So young coaches in particular, but coaches of programs, that concept of what is home base and what does it look like for us. I can't tell you how much value I think there is in that. And I think it's also applicable outside of basketball. Like, again, off mic, you and I were talking about some of the stuff that I have been through. There's a test of what your home base is that's coming, whether it's athletics, whether it's real life. There are going to be tests that come. And if you know what your home base is, there is unbelievable amount of comfort that you can gain from that. And obviously, from an athletic standpoint, there's a ridiculous amount of growth to be made as well. I want to talk a little bit about Gabe now, and you know, the time that you've spent around the game with your son is, God, I don't know. Hell, there's no way to count those hours, I would imagine. But you have made mention that Gabe lives his core values. I mean, that's obviously something that's important to you, so it's going to be something that's important to your family, and it's going to be something that they understand. Through the process of his evolution as a player, were there any challenges to focusing and making sure that his development was what he wanted it to be, what you guys decided was important, and still being able to balance that with the overall growth of the program. Was there a challenge to that, or was it, how did that kind of play out for you guys?
I don't know about a challenge between his growth and the growth of the program. I think those two were pretty tightly connected, but you know, Game definitely had some challenges early on playing with the Blue Chips. He was, you know, him playing with the Blue Chips was the very first time he ever played AAU basketball. And so we had no idea what we were walking into. And you know, it turned out to be an incredible experience for him, but there was a lot of self-doubt early on in that. And, you know, a lot of, I mean, as you can imagine, a lot of hate out there and a lot of people questioning whether he should be on the team and all the, like, he heard everything. And so, I mean, I remember clear as day him sitting on a box in our living room telling me that he had just not played very well at a tournament, and him just saying, I just want to be able to wear sweatpants to church again, which sounds like a weird thing to be saying, but he just meant just wanted to be normal. He didn't want to be judged all the time. He didn't want everybody to, like, we'd always be under the microscope. And so that was really, I think he was in sixth grade, maybe. That was really when we said, I was like, okay, we're off base on how he's defining success. Like, it was really just about whether he was making or missing shots and how he played in each game, each individual game. So he was rising and falling with that. So we sat down and like went through his core values, just like I've done with all these other people and coaches. And, you know, he's devoted, selfless, and neoteness. Neoteness, like childlike joy. And so those were his three things. And so from that point on, we just tried to be really intentional about basing. So, like, after games, it was always, like, were you devoted? Were you selfless? Did you have fun? Like, did you look like you loved playing the game? And if he could say yes to those, then it was a win. Like, it was good. Like, that's success. And so reframing that for him, I think, gave him a lot of some autonomy over, basing that success. And then I think that childlike joy definitely spread to his teammates throughout high school, and the devotedness no doubt did. And so you could kind of see, like, his progression coming into high school and going through high school. You could see those values kind of becoming like who our team was. I think you know, it's definitely, I mean, the coach, the opportunity to coach Gabe was, I mean, it's the best experience of my life. I mean, I wouldn't trade it for anything.
And so the natural question for me, now there are about six questions that I thought of while you were giving that answer, and I probably won't get to all of them. But the natural question that leads to for me is, do you anticipate feeling a void, whether or not there's actually an impact of a void for you and your program without him there this year? Have you given that thought? And what type of experience do you think it's going to be, you know, making that adjustment, or at least experiencing this next run without him as a part of the program?
Yeah, it's going to be, I mean, there's definitely going to be a void. I mean, there's going to be a void on the floor for sure. I haven't had to call very many plays or do much stuff like over there within the game for about 3 or 4 years now. So I'm going to have to do some more of that. But, you know, this summer in June with our guys, It's not that much, really. I mean, we are still just doing our stuff, and the guys that we have coming back, they know what our stuff is. So, like, the impact that those guys before them, we are, like, one of the signs in our locker room is drink the water, but remember who dug the well. And so, like, our guys know who dug the well, like, are the guys that we have back, and like, they're going to try to honor those guys with how they play. And so, there'll be a void from just having him around, like the vocality and the urgency and the edge that he always brought. We've got to figure some of that stuff out. For me personally, I mean, I haven't coached a game without Gabe since, I mean, like, since he was like four.
Yeah.
Like, he's been like at every game and in the locker room and sitting on the bench and jumping up around and, you know, and so that's different for me. But you know, it doesn't change the, you know, I love the guys that we have. I want to help them get, you know, reach their dreams and, you know, become the people that they're capable of becoming too. And so that part of it, I mean, I'm excited for Gabe's opportunities and looking forward to watching him play and, you know, chasing down new challenges. And, you know, I have no doubt he'll approach it just like he's approached everything else.
Well, speaking of challenges, it's got to be at least something of a challenge to plan out or map out a way to follow his career, enjoy him as a college player, and still maintain the schedule that's a part of who you are.
Yeah, it's not going to be easy. But, you know, it's a 4-year window, 5-year window, 6-year window for some of these college guys now. But yeah, it's a 4-year window where I talked to our administration before, after our season. And I just said, you know, I want to be able to watch Gabe play, and they've been incredible. I mean, they had already talked about it and said, you know, we're good with you missing our stuff to go to Gabe's stuff. And I said, well, if you guys are sure about that and you're really willing to do that, then, I mean, I would love to keep coaching. But if you need somebody that is never going to miss, and, you know, then, you know, I understand, and I'll resign. Like, I get it. Like, I don't have any hard feelings at all. But I'm not missing game playing. Like, I'm not doing that. That violates my core values and who I am and what I think I need to be doing. And so, and I think our guys will completely understand that. With this, as much as we talk about our core values, I don't think our guys will, our players will have any issue with that at all. As a matter of fact, I think they would probably have more of an issue if I did miss.
That's outstanding, and God bless you. Amen to all that. I had expected that's probably what I would hear, but it's uplifting and encouraging, and it's a little bit refreshing to hear it, because challenges are challenges, but what you've got the opportunity to do is, you know, God bless you. Absolutely. And let me just say, I could ask a zillion more questions. I told you time-wise what we were going to try to do here, but so I'm going to eliminate some of the things I had planned to talk about. I end the podcast usually with a 4-question sequence, and I talked to you about interviewing Bob Galloney earlier, and Bob had shared with me that he got it from a book called Inside Out Coaching. So we do two
what? I know the questions.
Yeah, 2 whys and 2 whats. and I think you've answered enough questions on the podcast that some of this will be maybe even seem a little bit redundant. But why do you coach?
To inspire others to strive for excellence over success. It's my platform. It's why I think God created me to share that and share his message with kids. And I think this is the way he called me to do that.
And so the way that you coach, from your voice to your teaching style to your, why do you coach the way that you do?
Initially my answer would be, because I think most people's answer to that's if they haven't been intentional and thought about it, I think it's, that's how you were coached. That's how I think most people coach and go about it. And that's how I did it the first 7 years of my career. Why do I coach the way I do now? I think it's true to who I am. I think it's authentic. I'm not trying to be somebody else. I'm not trying to be Izzo or Coach K or anybody like that. I'm comfortable with who I am. And I've done a lot of reflection and a lot of deep work to figure out what I really believe and what I think is important and what my purpose is. And so I'm going to coach through that lens all the time.
So now you get a bonus question, just because I'm going to cheat, because now I'm curious. How would you respond to a young coach, or maybe even an older coach, somebody who comes to you and says, I want to coach the way you coach. I read your book. I've watched your teams. I want to coach the way you coach. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, I've had that question a few times. Not exactly like that, but my whole thing is that you need to be you. Trying to coach like me is I think kind of devaluing like who God created you to be. And so you're special and unique, and you have talents that I don't have. We just need to figure out what those are and then be that. Like, like the core values. If you think tough is one of your core values, great, but make sure you go through the reflection of figuring out what you really believe and if that's really who you are. And I really think part of the reason the culture in our program has grown so much is because it is authentically mine. Like that is, like, it's exactly who I am. So I don't waver much on those things, like, because it's personal. I think the fact that it is intimate to you is a big deal.
Okay, so now we've gone through the two whys. Why do you coach? Why do you coach the way you coach? What is it like to be coached by you? The first of the two whats.
Yeah, this is a great question. I use this at some of my leadership talks. I guess I can only answer that as how I hope it comes across. I hope it is that they're loved and valued, and that their contribution to the team is far beyond whatever points or minutes they play, that they feel like they're an important, integral part of the group and the team. I hope that's how they feel. And I also hope they feel that I like being around them, like that I love what I'm doing, and, you know, they can enjoy their time, at basketball practice every day.
And then finally, what is your definition of success?
To inspire others to strive for excellence over success. So I feel like that's my reflection. If I'm tough, passionate, unified, and thankful, right? Those are my values. If I live my values, then I'm usually going to fulfill my purpose. So that's why my focus daily is to have positive body language, to choose extra work, to speak and act with urgency, and to show love. If I do those things, then I feel like I'm inspiring people by my actions and leading them towards excellence over success.
So I got one last thing for you, just because you're the guy that wrote the book and I read it. And at the end of your, I guess, I don't know if it's acknowledgments at the end of the book, the last thing, you offer a ton of different names and people that some people will know, some that they won't, but basically a thank you to a lot of people. The last thing in the book is adversity for everything. I'm tougher because of you. I'm more passionate because of you. I'm more unified because of you. And I'm more thankful because of you. I will continue to hunt and embrace you. I almost feel like that thing was there before the book got written, and it got put at the very end. How close am I to right?
Yeah, you're pretty right. Yeah, it was up in one of the chapters, and I pulled it back there because I wanted to end with something good. Most people probably never got to that, so I appreciate you reading all the way to the end.
Oh, are you kidding me? That's where the good stuff is.
But I just think that's it, man. Like, stuff's going to be hard. How you respond to adversity, like, that's who you are. Like, we can all pretend to be a lot of different stuff, but, you know, like, how you respond when things don't go your way, I think that's the real you.
Some motivated soul, though, is going to read your book all the way to the end, and they're going to get to the last sentence, and they're going to say, well, I'm not hunting adversity, so I'm out.
Yeah, you might as well hunt it. It's coming anyway. You might as well go get it.
That's spot on, because it's coming. We don't know when it's coming. We don't know what it's going to look like, but it's coming. Look, Coach, I told you before this started, I'm not trying to blow smoke or suck up to anybody. You don't have to choose to do this. You've got lots of other things going on, and I really appreciate your willingness to sit down and talk with me. I've always appreciated that. If I read a blog, you know, a BCG blog, and fire you off a text, I get a text back, and you're willing to be available and share what you have. And when I took that coaching job back in the fall of 2020, you were like the second person that I called to say, hey, this core values thing, like, I might only do this for a year. Can I, is that possible to do something that's valuable? And I'm here to tell you, a 3-18 season, with a group of young men that were going through the loss of a bunch of teammates and the loss of coaches and the pandemic and getting games canceled because of COVID. And I don't know how we did in that area. I feel like I could gauge us pretty well, but what little conversation we had about that, and then the ability to reflect on some of your stuff, was helpful to us in a time that won't matter to anybody, maybe except me and those 8 or 9 guys that were really a part of that. And your book is going to do that for a lot of people. I've said it before, and maybe not to you, but the value in what you do is much, much bigger than one conversation, or one or two conversations, but the value for me is in those one or two conversations. You don't have to have them, so I appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me, Coach. Thanks a lot. I'm grateful to be here and have the opportunity to share.
Oh, we'll be in touch, brother. You take care of yourself, okay?
All right. You too, Coach. Thanks.
Yep.
Bye.
Hey, it's me again. Before we get out of here, I want to say thanks again for listening to the Basketball and Life podcast with Coach John Cook. Hope you enjoyed today's episode. More importantly, hope you'll revisit us to check out other episodes in the future. And don't forget, you can visit our website, bballandlife.com. That's bballandlife.com to access any of our episodes or content that you enjoy or would like to check out again. Again, visit us at bballandlife.com. There's also membership opportunity available for you there as well. And you can get 10% discount on any and all merchandise available at bballandlife.com. If you or anyone you know might be interested in using our podcast to advertise for your business, you can email me at bballandlifecoachjohncook@gmail.com, and we can discuss advertising opportunities there as well. Again, thanks so much for listening to the Basketball and Life podcast. Hope that you'll visit us again soon.